This message comes from Capital One. Your business faces unique challenges and opportunities. That's why Capital One offers a comprehensive suite of financial services backed by the strength of a top 10 commercial bank. Visit CapitalOne.com/commercial. Member FDIC.
You're listening to the 1A Podcast. I'm Jen White. And this is In Case You Missed It, where we bring you some of the week's most important conversations that you might have missed. A Super Tuesday is this week, and before we move on, remember news is rapidly changing. To keep up with all the latest, tune into your local member station or visit npr.org. Now, votes are being cast in Alaska, Arkansas, California, Colorado, Maine, Massachusetts, Minnesota, North Carolina, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Texas, Utah, Vermont, Virginia, and Alabama, where we're visiting today. Democrats are also holding a caucus in American Samoa. After some uncertainty, we now know Donald Trump is eligible to appear on the ballot in all the remaining contests. On Monday, all 9 Supreme Court justices rejected a move by Colorado voters who cited a provision of the 14th Amendment of the Constitution to bar the Republican frontrunner from standing for office. After the break, we get into what the Supreme Court's decision means for the election this year and any future attempt to disqualify the former president. Stay with us.
This message comes from Capital One, offering commercial solutions you can bank on. Now more than ever, your business faces unique challenges and opportunities. That's why Capital One offers a comprehensive suite of financial services, all tailored to your short and long-term goals. Backed by the strength and stability of a top 10 commercial bank, their dedicated experts work with you to build lasting success. Explore the possibilities at CapitalOne.com/commercial, a member FDIC.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Rosetta Stone, the perfect app to achieve your language learning goals no matter how busy your schedule gets. It's designed to maximize study time with immersive 10-minute lessons and audio practice for your commute. Plus, tailor your learning plan for specific objectives like travel. Get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off and unlimited access to 25 language courses. Learn more at rosettastone.com/NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy. Family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's teladochealth/whatsyourwhy.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Mint Mobile. From the gas pump to the grocery store, inflation is everywhere. So Mint Mobile is offering premium wireless starting at just $15 a month. To get your new phone plan for just $15, go to mintmobile.com/switch. Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from Amgen, a biotechnology pioneer leading the fight against the world's toughest diseases such as cancer, heart disease, asthma, and osteoporosis. In a new era of human health, Amgen continues to accelerate the pace of change, operating sustainably and drawing upon deep knowledge of science to push beyond what's known today. With each decade, they reliably deliver powerful new therapies to patients. Learn more at Amgen.com.
Joining us now is Steve Vladek. He's a professor at the University of Texas School of Law. He's also author of The Shadow Docket. Steve, it's great to have you back.
Thanks for having me, Jen.
So the ruling says a state cannot disqualify a presidential candidate, in part because it doesn't have that power, and in part because having such power would lead to chaos. How is this consistent with other decisions taken by the court?
I mean, I think part of the problem is that it's really not. This is a court that has for years been moving toward a very sort of formalistic approach to constitutional interpretation, a approach that is supposed to eschew, political considerations, an approach that's supposed to be not worried about the consequences if the answer to the legal question is clear. And, Jen, I think some of what we saw in the court's decision on Monday is a court that is not actually fully ready to embrace that and was pushed toward this result with, as you say, all 9 justices at least agreeing on the bottom line. Because of that very real-world, non-textual, non-legal concern about what it would mean if each state could decide for itself. in one respect, that's not very surprising, but it is, I think, to a large degree inconsistent with what we've seen from this court lately.
Well, help us break down something that sounds technical and weedy, but it is important. What did the court say about Section 5 of the 14th Amendment and how it relates to Section 3? And just briefly remind us what those two sections say.
Sure. I mean, so the 14th Amendment, of course, was adopted in 1868 on the far side of the Civil War, and it's a pretty big one. Section 3 of the 14th Amendment is the provision at the heart of these cases. That's the part that says, if you engage in insurrection having previously taken an oath to the federal Constitution, you're disqualified from holding future office. Section 5, Jen, is that part of the 14th Amendment that authorizes Congress to pass statutes that would implement all of the 14th Amendment, not just Section 3. And what the Supreme Court held yesterday is that the principal way, in fact, maybe the only way, to enforce Section 3, to give teeth to its prohibition on future office holding by folks who engage in insurrection, is for Congress to pass some kind of implementing legislation. Jen, Congress hasn't done that. And so the effect of that ruling is, in one sense, to kick the ball to Congress, but in another sense, at least in the near term, to make it very difficult, if not impossible, for anyone to enforce Section 3, even against folks we might all agree engaged in the kind of insurrection to which Section 3 applies.
And again, why did the court say that was the decision?
Yeah, I mean, so the brief majority opinion, the unsigned majority opinion, points to at least some historical arguments. They point to, you know, a decision shortly after the 14th Amendment was ratified by Chief Justice Chase. Jen, it's really very much a consequentialist opinion about how and why the Constitution doesn't allow states to create their own qualifications for office. The majority pointed to this case from the 1990s where the Supreme Court had said Arkansas didn't have the power to impose term limits on federal representatives because states can't create their own qualifications. And I think, Jen, what's at least to some degree unsatisfying about this opinion is that it really has a bit of a sort of smorgasbord feel with regard to the arguments the justices were relying on. There's one point where the court even says, you know, whether any one of these arguments by themselves would have been enough. The relevant point is that when you take them all together, they lead us to this result. That's not typically how this court, especially in the higher profile cases we've seen out of it lately, has approached constitutional interpretation.
Well, the former president spoke to reporters from his home in Mar-a-Lago on Monday. Here's what he said.
Essentially, you cannot take somebody out of a race because an opponent would like to have it that way. And it has nothing to do with the fact that it's the leading candidate, whether it was the leading candidate or a candidate that was well down on the totem pole. You cannot take somebody out of a race. The voters can take the person out of the race very quickly, but a court shouldn't be doing that, and the Supreme Court saw that.
Democratic Representative Jamie Raskin told CNN the court's decision was driven as much by politics as it was their interpretation of the Constitution.
This court just didn't want to go anywhere near it and is saying Congress has to deal with it, knowing that the Congress is split because there's a very narrow Republican majority in the House and a narrow Democratic majority in the Senate. So, you know, we're going to fight for it, but it looks like this is a constitutional norm that the people of the United States are going to have to enforce at the ballot.
So, Steve, we're talking to you on Super Tuesday, and this ruling came down just hours before the polls opened today. What do you take away from the timing of this decision?
I mean, I think it's pretty clear that the justices had all along looked at yesterday as their deadline for getting this ruling out. You know, the court took up this case at the very beginning of January. They put it on a very accelerated briefing schedule. Oral argument was, you know, 26 days ago. And I think it's pretty clear that their goal was to get out a decision by yesterday, no matter what. You know, I think part of the problem is that it means that there's some sloppiness in what the court issued yesterday. There are a number of places, for example, where the joint separate opinion by the three Democratic appointees, Justices Sotomayor, Kagan, and Jackson, are responding to arguments that aren't in the majority opinion, suggesting that actually the majority toned down its rationale. But, you know, Jen, part of what happened, I think, because the court was moving so quickly, is you had this actually really significant disagreement among the justices about how much they were deciding beyond the narrow question of whether Colorado could disqualify former President Trump. All nine justices agreed that at least that was true, that a state cannot unilaterally disqualify a presidential candidate. You know, the majority opinion goes further and says states can't disqualify any federal candidates, including senators, representatives, on the ground that they engage in insurrection under Section 3. And it suggests that even at the federal level, the only way to enforce Section 3 is through a new act of Congress. That's where we saw some pushback, not just from the three Democratic appointees, but also from Justice Amy Coney Barrett, who wrote separately to say she didn't think the court had to go that far and she wasn't willing to go that far. Again, Jen, had the court not been hustling, maybe they would have been able to iron out some of these differences and to speak with a little more clarity in what they finally released.
So I want to pull on that thread a little bit, because the three liberal justices said the ruling did shield the petitioner, i.e. Trump, from, quote, future controversy. And they added that the conservative majority has moved to, quote, insulate all alleged insurrectionists from future challenges to their holding federal office. So I'm trying to understand, if that is their argument, how did this become a 9-0 decision?
So, I mean, I think we have to be careful whenever we talk about the Supreme Court to differentiate between the vote as to the bottom line and the vote as to the rationale. So all nine justices agreed with, Jen, the narrowest bottom line of the case, which is that the Colorado Supreme Court was wrong to keep former President Trump off of the ballot in Colorado, that President Trump should be on the ballot in Colorado. There's no question that all nine justices agree with that and signed on to that. Where there's disagreement, and where I think some of the, you know, media accounts yesterday may have not gotten all the way into the nuance, is that there's at least some lack of consensus among the justices as to how this would apply in other cases. So other cases, for example, if a, you know, convicted January 6th rioter runs for Congress and a state tries to disqualify him or her from running for Congress. If in a future administration, you know, someone like Jeff Clark is appointed acting attorney general, whether that appointment can be challenged in a judicial proceeding on the ground that Clark was himself part of the insurrection on January 6th. So, you know, I think part of the mess here is that the clarity we often get from the Supreme Court when it really takes its time to speak with one voice, you know, to provide a summary of its opinion, we didn't get yesterday. So folks saw the bottom line that Trump won, but then I think are not necessarily fully understanding where the daylight is between the five justices in the majority who went further to say that states can never disqualify any federal office holders, and the four justices who would have said, well, let's save that for another day, and let's save how the federal government might enforce Section 3 in other cases for another day. That daylight, Jen, may not matter today. Trump's on the ballot in Colorado. It may not matter tomorrow. He'll be on the ballot in, you know, all of the states. But it could matter a lot in a future administration and when we start talking about folks other than Donald Trump.
Steve, really briefly, there's a big push for the court to rule on Donald Trump's claims regarding his immunity. Does this send a signal at all about other cases Trump is involved in?
You know, I think the problem is that it probably does, but it's going to be really hard to figure out what that is until we get that ruling. So, you know, last week, the Supreme Court agreed to take up the immunity case. They're moving fairly quickly on that. But, Jen, we're not going to know until that decision comes out, probably Memorial Day at the earliest, whether the court was trying to split the difference between these two cases or whether the court was really just sort of throwing up its hands and saying, we're not going to be responsible for any of this. We're going to leave it to the voters to sort it out.
That's Steve Vladeck, a professor at the University of Texas School of Law and the author of The Shadow Docket. Steve, thank you.
Thanks, Jen.
This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Special thanks to our friends at WBHM in Birmingham for hosting us for this show. I'm Jen White. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk more soon. This is 1A.
This message comes from Jackson. Let's face it, retirement planning can be confusing. At Jackson, we're working to make retirement clear for everyone, starting with you. Our easy-to-understand resources and user-friendly digital tools help simplify your entire experience. You can have confidence in your retirement with Clarity from Jackson. Seek the clarity you deserve at Jackson.com. Jackson is short for Jackson Financial Incorporated, Jackson National Life Insurance Company, Lansing, Michigan, and Jackson National Life Insurance Company of New York, Purchase, New York.
Support for NPR and the following message come from IXL Learning. IXL Learning uses advanced algorithms to give the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. Get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when you sign up today at IXL.com/NPR.
This election season, you can expect to hear a lot of news, some of it meaningful, much of it not. Give the Up First podcast 15 minutes, sometimes a little less, and we'll help you sort it out, what's going on around the world and at home. Three stories, 15 minutes, Up First, every day. Listen every morning, wherever you get your podcasts.